she got roomed with a nun. And she said, I don't know what came over me, but every nasty joke I'd ever been told. She was 93. And so she said, I had this impulse to, you know, explain all these jokes that I'd had in my... Okay, so at this convention, every time anybody introduced themselves as, I'm Fred and I'm an alcoholic, I had this impulse to say, you sure are. Or, glad you're here. Okay, but... It's not about me. You know, a few times we run into people who walk through these doors. Oh, and I want to say something else real quick. At this convention, we advertised a convention in The Hague, and we said, you know, come to the convention and to the newcomers. You don't even have to go to a meeting. You know, just get here and hang out outside, eat, smoke cigarettes, and have a social experience without alcohol. That's what a convention about is also. So, and I've seen people here who have long-term sobriety who are struggling. I've seen people who have short-term sobriety and they've come with pregnant wives and new relationships. And life goes on, you know, in this program. It's just a privilege to watch this stuff evolve, you know. That's very nice. And so congratulations, everybody. And I've been the bossy one walking around. Yeah, sponsor? Well, get one. And I don't want to tell you what to do. Just get sponsored. A few years ago, I went to a Wednesday meeting, and there was this guy hanging outside. And I thought, I haven't seen him before. And it was our speaker that you will hear in a few minutes. But there was something special about this guy. And when I was in early sobriety, I was told, you know, get a little book and a pencil. And like that kid in school, you know, was always taking notes, you know, write down, taking notes. And I did that from the beginning of my sobriety. And I have lots of little books so that when I, you know, get in trouble or then I can open up a book. And what I've written down, I immediately know who said it. And so when Dale came in to this Wednesday night meeting and he shared like for 3 minutes, I thought, oh man, I need a new book. Because this guy is delivering wonderful messages. And a little bit of background, Dale has always, he works on the embassy. He's building the embassy, the American embassy. And he tells that he has people on his crew that are, you know, from all over the world, and he comes from the South, and one person from Poland said, where are you from? Where are you from? And he said, well, what I will say is that this guy has a message that's delivered in a way that that just goes to my heart. We started the first day meeting in The Hague, a noon meeting, and it's a daily reflections meeting. He, on his own, has printed out the daily reflections for every Thursday, you know, till, 3,000. he's been, when we say in the first meeting, you know, when you come in, newcomer, you haven't done anything that anybody else in these rooms haven't experienced one way or the other. And Dale qualifies for everything. And he's been, his career has gone from, you know, the dirt and bridges and jails to, you know, the clearance, the government clearance to build an embassy. This is, you know, this is the result of this incredible program. He built his home in Georgia and Alabama. I knew that. I was just testing you. And he has a porch on the back that it has 12 steps to go up to the room. So, and that's just, So, I would suggest if you have a pencil or a pen, you know, write down what he's got to say. He's going to be moving on, and we're going to miss him a great deal. I will definitely miss him, and his wife, Christine, I'm glad she got to read, because she presents a very lovely way of reading. What else do I have to say? That you are... Just shake it, don't break it, honey. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. I'm Dale, and I'm an alcoholic. Lord, take me where you want me to go. Let me meet who you want me to meet. Tell me what you want me to say, and keep me out of your way. So if I do a bad talk, y'all know who to blame. I'll go ahead and, newcomer, the latest person come today that was here last night, got the big book?
No, he went home yesterday evening.
Okay. Well, I had a gift for him, but we'll see if we can get it to him. I'll start off with some dates. You know, Roland H. brought the message to Ebby. Ebby brought the message to Bill. Bill brought the message to Charlie P. Charlie P. brought the message to Easy E. Easy E brought the message to Larry A. And Larry A. brought the message to me. You know, and it seems like I've seen further than others. It's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. I love the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been involved in a lot of traveling and visiting a lot of these places that are important to our history and meeting a lot of people. We had the privilege of meeting Dr. Bob's son, Smitty, a couple of times, you know. And, you know, Dr. Bob, his parents took him to church, him and his sister to church, four times a week. So, you know, he said that when he grew up, he wasn't going to go back into those churches. Well, Dr. Bob, he didn't get sober till he was 56 years old. And he had went to a couple of the Oxford groups prior to that, you know, because his wife thought he might be an alcoholic, so she was trying to get him straight. And the Oxford group was a very religious organization. So, but I think that after he met Bill Wilson on May 13th, 1935, I think that he actually had a spiritual awakening, because, you know, he stayed sober for a while, and within the next month he had to go to a conference in Atlantic City, and he got drunk. When he came back, Bill gave him a couple of drinks, you know, to keep him, because he had the tremors, you know. And on June 9th, he had his last drink, because he had to have a surgery, do a surgery. And, you know, Dr. Bob, he was a proctologist. So you didn't want nobody working on your ass with shaking hands. But, so the next day, June 10th, 1935, that was the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's our birthday. And if you're ever around, like my friend I met from New Zealand, if you've ever had the privilege of being around Akron, Ohio for Founders Day, that's something you should not miss. It's every year around June 10th. It's a week, and it's a beautiful experience. They tell me where I'm from, Sweet Home, Alabama, that if you don't mention your sobriety date, you probably don't have one. Well, my sobriety date is September 8th, 1988. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was in 76, so it took me 12 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous to get here. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, well, I was 22 years old. My first in-laws thought I might have a drinking problem, and they were correct. And I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years until I finally got there. And it amazes me, you know, to see all the young people in Alcoholics Anonymous today, you know, I mean, when I heard Lisa, you know, started drinking when she was 5 years old, I said, hell, why'd she start so late? But, you know, Bill Wilson, he didn't start drinking until he was 21 years old. Dr. Bob started when he was 19 years old. And Dr. Bob didn't get sober until he was 56 years old. Bill Wilson was 39 years old. So, you know, it's for the young people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, at this early age. And it also shows older people, you know, you're not too old to change your life. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, if you want to start living, this is the place to do it. But my parents owned a bar. I was raised around the bar business, so I saw what alcohol did to you people, so I wasn't going to drink. So that's the reason I became non-drinker until I started doing drugs, and then eventually when I was 18 years old. And again, I don't believe in coincidence, because in the year I was born, I'm just turned 64 years old. The year I was born, 1953, the 12 and 12 came out. The year I took my first drink, Bill Wilson died. So I took my first drink in 1971. I was 18 years old, and because the drugs had run out. You know, I wasn't a wino. I tell everybody I wasn't a wino. I was an any-o. You put whatever it was in my hand, anything to get out of there, what was that? You know, it got anything that would change me. And that's what, you know, I had the defects of character before I picked up the first drink. The defects of character is what we drink to start off with. And that, what we do with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, our lives change. We work on the defects of character and the wreckage of our past. So we no longer, drinking is no longer a solution. And, you know, what drinking goes away if we continue to do this. And the speaker last night, Ralph, he talks about going to meetings and especially working the steps. You got to work the steps. You know, you can live in a barn for 20 years and that's not going to make you a cow. You can go to meetings for 20 years and that's not going to keep you sober. You've got to work the 12 spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous so your life will change. And when your life changes, you change. And that's what happened. You know, when I came into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 22 years old the first time in 76. I had a sponsor there, and I knew him. I went to school with his son, and he used to drink at my parents' bar. And I saw him disappear one day, and I never knew where he went. Didn't think about it until I come in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And when we talk about sponsorship, you know, it's not about the sponsee, it's about the sponsor. Working with the sponsee reiterates the steps with us. It makes us work the steps again, you know. I tell my sponsor, well, you know, he's getting drunk, or he's getting drunk. He said, well, you're staying sober. So that's what we do, you know. I mean, sometimes they told me that sometimes you have to give up on people, not because they don't care, not because you don't care, but because they don't care. And so I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years, and he was still sponsoring me and still sponsoring. I said, well, how come you didn't give up on me? He said, because you'd come in, and you know, I'd stay a while, and I saw something in your eyes, and I thought when you was ready, you would come in. When a student is ready, a teacher will appear. And I was ready. I wound up going to a lot of places, jails, institutes. Well, our big book talks about jails, institutions, and death. I do things backwards. My last drunk, I was pronounced legally dead, overdose, alcohol and cocaine. I went on to the nut house, and then I went to the penitentiary. As a result of my last drunk, I went and took care of a resentment. Guess who paid the price? In a blackout, I went out and committed 10 felonies in 10 minutes' time, and don't remember nothing about it, but there was plenty of witnesses, so I wound up with a 10-year prison sentence. But I was freer in prison than most of my friends were on the streets of the program Alcoholics Anonymous, because we had AANA there. And I went to meetings. And I can remember my first day in jail when I was tired. You know, the first day when I gave up, this September 8th, 1988, if I make it three more weeks, I'll have 29 years sobriety. And it's not because of me. It's because of people like you in places like this. But I was in that county jail on DTs. I done puked my guts out. I was laying on a fetal position on that cold concrete floor, and somebody said, you need help, don't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, I think I got some medicine for you. And he had a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew, you know, that's what I need to do to change my life. For the 12 years before that, you know, my in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd written a book. As Dale sees it. If y'all had written, as Dale sees it, this room would be empty. So thank God y'all didn't go as Dale sees it. Y'all, as Bill sees it. But I was invited to share on the theme of the convention, unity. And I borrowed a deck of cards from my buddy Nick. Because, you know, this box... It holds, this box is just like the steps. The cards are us. This box holds us together. The steps hold us together. But this box is also like the traditions. The traditions hold these groups together, because without this box to hold us together, we'd be scattered everywhere. We'd get lost, or you wouldn't see us anymore. You know, that's, you know, just a pictogram to show what's, you know, what to simplify it for us dummies. You know, AA, that's what I should have, you know, read AA for Dummies, because I was definitely a dummy when I came in this program. I was Mr. Know-It-All, but I had my first sponsor, Larry A., also told me my first, he was a, you know, in the sponsors I had and their previous, it was, they grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous where it wasn't any keep coming back. Because, you know, that was the years where there was few alcoholics that was recovery and a lot of people coming in. So they say when you're ready to go, to come, if you're ready to get straight, come on in. Thankfully that we've got a population such of recovering alcoholics that we can have a sponsorship today. But he, you know, he'd tell me to call him up. I'd call him up, say, this is Dale. He'd hang the phone up. I said, you told me to call you? He said, yeah, I told you to call me, but I didn't say I had to talk to you. And I'd ask him, I said, well, how come you never call me? He said, you don't have anything I want. And I'd ask him, I'd say, well, how long do I have to work the steps? Do I have to just work on my steps? He said, how long you want to stay sober? How long you want to stay sick? And today, you know, when I had 20 years of sobriety, my sponsor told me, he said, you need to stop working the steps. I said, well, you told me 20 years, you told me 32 years ago I needed to continue to work the steps. He said, no, I didn't say that. He said, you need to work the steps, but you got 20 years of sobriety, you need to start living them. So what we do, my wife and I, we incorporate the steps in our lives. Every morning we have a morning meditation. We do a religious meditation. We do a spiritual meditation with the book. And again, let me tell you, Dr. Bob, when he went to these Oxford groups and when he went on into his 15 years of sobriety, he used a little book called 24 Hours a Day. And that's what he did every day and at his meetings. So we do the 24 hour a day at that meeting. I mean, every morning. And then we do the tradition. We work the traditions in our marriage, because what's the traditions? Traditions is unity. You know, getting along with other people. That's what we do every morning. And when I go to work, my wife has done paraphrase those three items that I talked about, you know, and she's done texted me so I can review them again. You know, and that's, it works for us. So maybe you can incorporate it into yours. But Bill Wilson. Now, Bill Wilson was a pretty intelligent person. He was captain of his football team, American football, when he was in school. He was also violinist in his school orchestra. When he was 17 years old, he had his first bout of depression because his first love died during operation. So that was his first bout of depression. A year later, when he was 18, he met Lois. And 2 years later, he got engaged to her, and he finally married her when he was 23 years old. He was committed to Towns Hospital in New York four times during the year 1934. Abby Thatcher visited in November of 1934 and told him about his experience and how he needed to change and stuff like that. So on Bill's last stay in December at Towns Hospital, that's when he had his spiritual experience. That's when he saw his flash of light. He was on the belladonna treatment, you know, and that's when he got down and said, you know, God, if you're out there, please show me. And that's what, you know, that's when he saw that flash of light. And he hasn't had a drink ever since. And that was December 11th, 1934. Now, when Bill Wilson, you know, he was going to Oxford Group trying to get people sober and all this, and nobody was listening and all this, so he wound up having to go to Akron, Ohio. And again, this was in May of 1935, and Bob was 56 years old, and, you know, that's when they had their little talk. And, in fact, Smitty, Dr. Bob's son, drove him and his mother to this meeting that was only going to last about 30 minutes, which lasts about 5 to 6 hours. And Smitty told me that he thought that his father actually had a spiritual awakening also. And if you ever get the privilege again, if to go to Akron, Ohio, to this Founders Day, or just go to Akron, Ohio anytime, and go up to Dr. Bob's house. Now, the second floor is where Sue's bedroom was. And the people, Dr. Bob would take these people into his house, and they would spend the night, and he would put them up, and Sue would sleep downstairs on the couch. So when people started getting sober, you know, he would take them up to Sue's bedroom, and they'd do the third step prayer at Sue's bed. And my wife and I had the privilege of doing that. And, you know, the spiritual experience you get out of that, the feeling of being where this deal started, is unbelievable. But it was in 1950, at our first international convention in Cleveland, Ohio, that's when Bill Wilson introduced the 12 steps and traditions for acceptance. And I've got some notes here I'll be reading from. What he called the 12 traditions to start off with was 12 points to ensure our future. He viewed them as being essential for the preservation of our society, just as the 12 steps are essential for the recovery of the individual member. AA's most challenging concern, he had written, was to preserve among AA's such a powerful unity that neither weakness of persons nor the strife and strain of those troublous times can harm our common cause. Now, Bill, even though when our fellowship was very young, probably had about 100 members, he saw that we needed a little structure. That's when they started working on the traditions. By working together, we could achieve, from his writings, by working together, we could achieve and maintain sobriety that had eluded us when we were alone. When AA was less than 100 members, most of them concentrated in New York and Akron, Bill and Dr. Bob had a vision of a united fellowship that could reach out to alcoholics throughout North America and even the world. In Bill's own talks and writings, he had always emphasized the need to preserve unity in order to maintain sobriety for ourselves and preserve AA for the millions who still do not know. In introducing the traditions, Bill had written, "So long as the ties that bind us together are far stronger than those forces that would divide us, if they could, all will be well. We will be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty." What were the forces that would tear us apart? Well, Bill thought that property, power, prestige. He also felt it necessary that we should avoid controversies over politics and religion. And then as the traditions came in, he also talked about anonymity. You know, everybody said that Bill, you know, was a loved being the center of attention. But when they came out with the traditions, you know, he didn't like the limelight. He was offered an honorary degree from Yale, and he refused it. He was Time Magazine wanted to put him on the cover, even film him from the back. He wouldn't allow that to happen because, you know, he was part of a fellowship that wanted to go to where it is today, to the world. So he was very adamant about the anonymity statement. In fact, the last years of his life, he didn't even like to go to meetings because everybody, you know, wanted him to speak as a founder of Alcoholics Anonymous instead of an alcoholic. He said, "I'm a drunk. That's all I am." And today, you know, it's the same thing with me. You know, I tell people I'm not a big deal. I'm a change deal. I'm a change deal because I've worked the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I've worked these 12 spiritual principles in my life, and I incorporated them in my life. You know, in 1988, I was sitting in a prison cell, wondering when I only wound up doing a year and a half in prison. When I got out, I went back to work inside the prisons. You know, it's not a big deal. I go into a prison, I say, "I'm Dale, I'm an alcoholic." And they look at me, big deal. AIS number 153808. They know I've been there. I'm not going to bullcrap them. You know, and that's, You know, and I tell them not how I got out of the prison, but how I stay out working a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love to go into meetings of prisons and hold hands with those inmates and say, hey, there's two types of people in the world, the caught and not caught. You know, most people don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because we felt, because we seen the light, but because we felt the heat. Well, and I love the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because we're a lot of, since we're united, you know, I've never seen a room so full of bobbleheads. You know, everybody's here. All right. When they brought the traditions, they wanted Bill to paraphrase them at the 1950 first convention so they could be accepted. And what he did, he paraphrased the 12 traditions, and I'm going to read that real quick. It's because he just wanted to be short, sweet, and to the point. That touching all matters affecting AA unity, our common welfare should come first. That AA has no human authority, only God, as he may speak in our group conscience. That our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. That any alcoholic may become an AA member if he says so. We exclude no one. That every AA group may manage its own affairs as it likes, providing surrounding groups are not harmed thereby. That we AAs have but a single aim, the carrying of the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That in consequence, we cannot finance, endorse, or otherwise lend the name Alcoholics Anonymous to other enterprises, however worthy. That AA as such ought to remain poor. Less problems with property management and money divert us from our sole aim. That we ought to be self-supporting, gladly paying our small expenses ourselves. That AA should remain forever non-professional. Ordinary 12-step route never be paid for. That as a fellowship, we should never be organized, but may nevertheless create responsible service boards or committees to ensure our better propagandation and sponsorship. And that these agencies may engage full-time workers for special tasks. That our public relations ought to proceed upon the principle of attraction rather than promotion, and better to let our friends recommend us. That our personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films ought to be strictly maintained as our best protection against the temptations of power or personal ambition. And finally, that anonymity before the general public is the spiritual key to all our traditions, ever reminding us that we are always to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to this end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And I made 10 copies of that, so I'll put them in if anybody wants that talk. In 1965, at another international, which was our 30th anniversary, and also our 4th international, they brought forth the Responsibility Creed, which reads, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. This was written by Al S., who also wrote the Unity Declaration, which was accepted at our 35th anniversary, 1970, at our International Convention in Miami, Florida. And I'll read something about that. In fact, the theme for that convention was unity within our fellowship. At the convention's Saturday night ceremony, Bob H., who was general service manager at the time of GSO, stated, as you know, the theme of this convention is united within our fellowship. We have asked several of our ex-delegates and members from overseas to be on stage and participate with us, adopting our new declaration of unity. A unity is a special quality which makes our fellowship unique. It is the cement that holds our society together, the platform that makes AA service possible. It is more than agreement on basic principles, more than freedom from destructive strife. It is a bond fashioned of shared experience, such as this one we share tonight. Unity is our most precious possession, our best guarantee of AA's future. May we all value and preserve it today and all the tomorrows to come. Bob H. then asked all participants on the stage to recite the Declaration, Declaration of Unity, which reads, "This we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA unity depend our lives and the lives of those to come." That's one reason I'm very stringent, very adamant about keeping the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. So let's keep this thing pure. Let's keep, you know, we have a lot of people from different alcoholic, and, you know, when they read the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of people say AA is another 12-step group. Well, AA is not just 12-step. It says in our print, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship. It is a fellowship. And, you know, there's no place, I love the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the way I feel when I'm with you. Because you take me out of me, and I'm able to deal with, to work with you. You take what's me, what my problems are, and, you know, help me. That's the room I get. That's the reason I keep coming to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need with the newcomer. You know, he's the life blood of Alcoholics Anonymous. The long timer, not old timers, long timers, is the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. The heart needs the blood, and the blood needs the heart. We need all this. You know, we had one in one of our meetings recently. We had a person that came out, come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. They just went out after 25 years and just came back in. You know, I have to hear that. You know, my sponsors also told me the further you are from your last drunk, you are the closer you are to your next one. So I have to remember that. You know, the monkey may be off my back, but the circus is still in town. I'll always be an alcoholic. I can't change that. But I am thankful that I'm alcoholic. Hell, for a long time I thought I was just crazy. Now I know I'm an alcoholic. I know what my problem is, and I know what my solution is. And the solutions are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous where you people are. And I appreciate you inviting me and my wife here. She read the traditions. She loves reading the traditions because, like I say, we work the traditions in our lives. And, you know, she's a double whiner. She's Al-Anon and AA. And she keeps me straight. But the program Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, if we're going to keep this thing pure, let's keep the traditions. Let's keep the cards in the box. And let's keep this deal going. And, you know, if nobody's told you they love you today, well, I do, and there ain't a daggone thing you can do about it. Thank y'all for being here.
Thank you, Dale. Great speech.